And I've got somebody here who is very, very capable of putting you into the naughty corner. It's John Trotman. Welcome, John.
Welcome, John. Thanks for coming in today.
And John is a real Renaissance man because he's here to talk about his poetry. John's lived on the island since 2011, but originally you were a headmaster, weren't you, John?
That's right. I was a headmaster for 14 years before I retired and came to the island to celebrate my retirement.
And you've been at some fantastic schools. You're at the Lees in Cambridge as a deputy headmaster.
That's right. The Lees in Cambridge. I've worked in some wonderful cities. I was head of English in Oxford before that.
Wow.
And then deputy head in Cambridge and then head in Bishop Stortford College, so halfway between London and Cambridge. So very well cited for all kinds of reasons. So I've been very lucky.
Fantastic. And the Isle of Wight, how are you liking it? You've been here 4 years now.
Absolutely love the Isle of Wight. Your weather forecast, James, brought back a memory of my very first visit. We came with my family. We'd been camping in the New Forest and we'd been advised to spend a week on the island and we came over.
Yeah.
But it was one of those torrential Augusts that you've been describing so well. And my dad, who was prone to impetuous decisions, drove round the island in an increasingly dark sulk and drove straight to the ferry and back again. So this lady in Hampshire who'd bid us a fond farewell was incredulous to see us roll back onto the campsite.
Oh, it's very, very similar to something we did. We got one of those VW camper vans about 8 years ago, thinking we were going to relive this kind of sort of 60s dream. Drove it to the other side of the island. We'd had it for 5 days. Found it was so wet on the campsite, and I'm a big man, and the two of us couldn't fit into the bed together. So we drove it straight back to our flat and parked it outside for 5 days. Well, it must be something about the island.
Lovely though the island is, getting stuck in a traffic jam in the rain somewhere in a lake or wherever is not the most inspiring moment, is it? But anyway, I came back, and thank heavens I did. I came back because by that stage I'd met my second wife, Mel, and she lived on the island for quite a time now. Because she was down here, I came down here. I was going to head off to the frozen north or somewhere with more hills, I have to confess. But I was tempted. Well, I came down to the island to marry Mel, and I've been absolutely delighted with it. Good. It's a really good example of how a relatively small area forces you to get to know it much more intimately than a larger area, and there's a huge amount to be learned from that. And that metaphor can extend into other sides of life as well, I think.
It's a great poet's island, isn't it? Because, of course, Tennyson was based here.
Oh, we live just round the corner from a place where Keats was, and Dickens wrote just down the road, and Tennyson, of course, over in Freshwater, and a whole host of other people. So, yes, the Victorians particularly, but there's a lively writing scene on the island now, and we might talk about that a bit later.
Well, you're a member of a sort of poetry circle at Key Arts, aren't you?
That's right. High Tide Poets. We meet every Monday afternoon, apart from during August, and there's an open invitation to people to join us there, but it's one of several writing groups across the island, there's a group I am meeting up with on Friday night at part of the Fringe, Corduroy's, which is an eclectic mixture of different writers from across the island. John Armstrong brings together that group, and so there's a very, very fertile and eclectic range of people writing and making music and acting and so on the island. For a small place, it's full of treasures, actually.
Well, what we're going to do is you've written a book, haven't you, called Both Brittle and Beautiful.
That's right.
I mean, it's a book of poetry, and we're going to over the course of the next hour have you read a number of the poems from that and then discuss those. I think that's probably the best way of doing it. And we've also got some of your music, so I think we'll probably listen to the first piece of music that you love, and it's the Beatles. It's Twist and Shout, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Okay, let's listen to that, and we'll be back afterwards.
Bye.
20 past two is the James and Judy show, and we're here with island-based poet John Trotman. Why did you choose that? Twist and Shout, John.
Well, partly my wife, Mel, who I've been talking about already, she's a huge Beatles fan,
yeah,
and has been ever since she was a teenager. My dad, I was referring to my dad, was a very liberal man in many ways, but he was a classical enthusiast, as am I now.
Mm-hmm.
There was a complete prohibition in my early teens on pop music. And there was the most enormous family row that I can vividly remember about the idea that the Beatles were going to be on at the London Palladium.
Yeah.
And I was going to go round to my friend's house to see ITV. We didn't have ITV, of course, to see the Beatles on the London Palladium. And eventually we managed to go, probably against my dad's knowledge and wishes. But that record is just so exciting still. I can still sense the excitement I felt at watching them. And that side of the Beatles I really like. Some of the more sentimental side of the Beatles I like too, but that exciting sound, it still touches me.
Yeah, it still sounds fresh, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
Now, Judy's going to talk to you a little bit about your poetry now, and then we're going to listen to some poetry after we've been through what sort of brought you into poetry in the first place.
Mm. Well, first of all, John, thanks so much for sending me your recently published volume of poetry, both Brittle and Beautiful. It's a collection of some 60 poems, and I have to say that I have enjoyed every single one of them. Each one of them conjures up a whole world that you feel you're entering new worlds every time you turn the page. And what really struck me about these poems was how very, very personal they are. They're very autobiographical. You reflect upon your childhood, your life as a teacher, your parents, and there are references to your own children too. And they also reflect your interests in travel, music, the natural world and photography. And indeed, the collection contains photographs that you've taken.
Yeah.
And the other thing that really struck me was the very diverse style of your poems. You're very accomplished across a range of styles. A lot of your writing is very lush, I felt. In a good way, very visual and very descriptive passages.
Yeah.
But also you experiment too with a couple of Japanese poetic forms, the haiku, which has just 17 syllables.
Yep.
And a very defined structure that you have to follow.
That's
in
right.
Terms of number of lines and numbers of syllables per line, and also in the form I hadn't come across before, the Japanese poetic form I hadn't come across before, which is a tanka,
yep,
which is slightly longer than a haiku,
yep,
and comprises some 31 syllables.
That's right.
Again, in a very set form. So I'd really like to ask you sort of what was the impetus behind this collection of poems? What drove you to write this collection, and had you been working on it for some years? Or
I have been working on it for a while. I was a teacher of English,
mm-hmm,
and rather like lots of teachers, I was pretty good at telling pupils what to do without necessarily expecting myself to do it. And so I'd been doing creative writing with pupils for quite a while, in the wonderful days when schools had time to do enough creative writing. I could bore for Britain on the national tragedy of education and creativity, or lack of at the moment. But anyway, I was running a creative writing class with one group, and I'd invited an American poet in, and she insisted that I should write as well. And that's what started me, really. And I think it's a very good maxim for us all. And an art teacher that I know very well and love dearly, similarly, he required everybody to paint and draw in a very undiscriminating, open way. And I just think it's so encouraging for everybody to pick up a pen or pick up a pencil and get started. And so, yes, I started writing about 15 years ago, 20 years ago maybe now, and the poems effectively spring out of a scatter of time between then and now.
Right, so the other thing that really interested me is, poetry always evokes such an emotional response, and must be an emotional process in the writing as well. And I just wondered, do you have like set working hours, or do you just write when the spirit moves you?
That's a very interesting question. And of course, proper professional writers famously have very disciplined regimes, most of them. No, I tend not to do that. I tend to be inspired by particular moments or particular journeys, quite a lot of them about journeys I've been on, or galleries that I've been to, or particular people. So poetry has, if you like, celebration of a moment, a commemoration of a moment, and trying to sort of hold that fleeting moment. And quite a lot of the poems are about that fleeting moment and the extent to which nearly all human experience has within it also the sense of that moment ending. And so they tend to have that in common, I think, a celebration but also an elegiac sense of sense to them as well. I'm naturally a very optimistic person, but I also find myself paradoxically, if you see what I mean, writing rather elegiacally about moving and beautiful moments.
Yes, and I think that's very therapeutic for your readers as well, to be able to experience those elegiac moments and reflect on the parallels with their own lives, and to read your words which express how they may have been feeling in relation to certain incidents, but they themselves perhaps couldn't have found the words to express it in that way.
Well, John, we're going to be able to listen to some of your poetry in a moment. Just before that, we've got one more of your tracks. This is The First Time I Met the Blues.
Yep.
Why did he choose this one?
Well, again, it's hopelessly autobiographical, all this. I'm really sorry if that is boring for people. But again, when I was quite young, when I'd moved away from the Beatles phase, I started getting into the blues, and partly because other enthusiasts were rather disreputable and rather attractively wild types. And so I got into people like John Mayall and Peter Green, the English blues players, and then into blues more generally, the Kings, Freddie King, Albert King, B.B. King. And that sense of across music from across the water, of course, and the excitement of everything this said about the American experience. And it's very often elegiac as well.
Yeah. Well, let's hear Buddy Guy then, and we'll be back after the ads.
Radio. We're putting community spirit back into radio.
What is creative design? It's design that works for you to bring value to your business. It enhances your product or service, ensuring your target market identify with your brand. Integrated into print and web communications, creative design from Cross Print Media ensures consistency across all digital media platforms, online and offline. Talk to Cross Print Media. Our team of skilled designers are here to help you. Call 524885 or email us on printmedia@crossprint.co.uk.
Hello there, I'm Andy from Hamilton's Fine Foods, and I'd like to introduce you to some of the new things that are happening in Hamilton's. Our newest venture is our new shop in Dodner Industrial Estate, where we have available hot sausage rolls, hot coffee, hot pies, and all sorts of other things for your lunch. We're open from 10 till 4 daily. If you're working in and around Dodner Industrial Estate, please call in.
Hamilton's Fine Foods. You'll find them on Dace Way and Pyle Street in Newport, also in Wootton and Cowes too.
White Fibre, the island's fastest broadband. But don't just take our word for it. Here's John Willison from Cowes.
The best thing about White Fibre is their speed of response. And you're actually talking to a human being who you know is local. It's not transferred over to India or Scotland. It's a local person.
Get the island's fastest broadband free for 12 months. Call 240240.
WhiteFibre.com.
24-month contract required. Faster speeds available in all cabled areas.
Check out the Riverside Centre Carpentry Shop next door to Vectis Radio. Skilled craftsmen have a small shop that's set up to donate to the Riverside charity. The shop contains nest boxes, tables, garden furniture, wooden horses. Practically anything wooden can be made to order. The skilled craftsmen are down to earth and really friendly. So don't be shy. Come and see them here at the Riverside Centre in Newport.
Hi, this is Pyro, the Rock Monster. Just popped in to tell you about the Rock Monster Show. Now extended to 3 hours, broadcasting every Saturday from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. with more of the best mix of classic rock, prog and blues and AOR and more. And at 12 o'clock we have the lock-in. So join me every Saturday night, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. only on Vectis Radio.
Broadcasting from the Riverside Centre in Newport, this is Vectis Radio.
The afternoon show, sponsored by Origins Theatre's new production, Charles Dickens Storyteller. We bring Charles Dickens back to life with a lookalike actor in period costume. Go to originstheatre.uk.
Okay, go, go, go.
I've got your picture that you gave to me, and it's signed with love, just like it used to be. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got your picture, she's got you. Got the records that we used to share, and they still sound the same as when you were here. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got the records, she's got you. Has it got me? I really don't know, but I know it won't let me be. I've got your class ring that proved your care, and it still looks the same as when you gave it, dear. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got these little things, she's got you. I've got your memory, or has it got me? Got your class ring that proved you cared. And it still looks the same as when you gave it, dear. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got these little things, she's got you.
Well, that was Patsy Cline with She's Got You. John, you've very kindly offered to read a selection of your poems on air, so we're very grateful for that. The first one you're going to be reading is set on the Isle of Wight, and it recalls the Remembrance Sunday service in 2011 in Newport, and it's called 11-11-11, 11 a.m. Newport.
The cannons thump to sound the silence in this island town, although expected, makes waiting ladies near us jump and shocks gulls into wheeling fright. Their screaming cries for 2 long minutes the only sound. The crowd, an infant class with bright tabards, shivering youths and old men in car coats, badged berets, pauses, pensive, stirred, and some amused by gulls' indiscipline, which echoes through the square where martial banners limply hang. The sounds are plangent. Island teenage soldiers crying once more for mum from slime of Passchendaele, Normandy, Hellman's bitter dust. Each cry knitting with the others down the years into cacophony. And then, as birds' wings slowly settle, the cannon cruelly booms to make them scream again. Newport's soldier youth calling through the cries, wailing in wet November skies to counterpoint the bugle's sad refrain.
Thank you, John. That was amazing. I mean, I've read that poem several times now, but to hear you read it brings it to life. And I think for me, it is important that poetry is read aloud. Would you agree with that?
I do, and I like going to readings by some of the people I've talked about already. But on the other hand, I like to think always that having heard poetry, people will then go back to read it. Most poems need and deserve close reading and multiple readings. And well, thank you for saying you've read this several times. That's perfect answer, Judy.
well, there's so much in this poem that I would like to talk about, but I feel we probably don't have time to do it justice. But one thing that for me that came from this was I really felt a link from this poem to some of the poetry of the First World War poets. And was that in your mind, or was that something conscious, or perhaps something unconscious, or perhaps I'm reading too much into it?
It probably, if I'm honest, unconscious. Mm-hmm. But none of us who've read anything really serious can have escaped the influence of the First World War poets. Never mind the poets, none of us can have escaped the effect culturally, socially, etc., of the First and Second War, and then the wars thereafter. So the poetry of this of the First War, immensely important, of course, in most people's education, so I subliminally that's been there. But this was, as you say, from a real experience on the 11th of November, my first remembrance service on the island. Prior to that, on that occasion, I'd been, you know, running school remembrance services. So here I was suddenly in the middle of a town which then I hardly knew, and the seagulls and their cries were very evocative, as were the people there and the sights.
Yes, I mean, it is so incredibly moving. You talk about an infant class with bright tabards and old men in car coats and badged berets. Yeah. And what I found really evocative was the way you talk about the slime of Passchendaele and then about Hellman's bitter dust.
Yeah.
And those two very evocative and effective descriptions of two very different theatres of war. You know, the slime, the mud, the water in the trenches, and then the dust and the heat of Helmand.
Thank you for saying that. I think a characteristic of a lot of poetry is that it says these things quite briefly,
yes,
doesn't it? And so those two words, slime and dust, I'm glad that it calls up and evokes such response from you, and that's what it was intended to do, but thank you for saying that.
I think we're going to have to go to the next track. I've got to move you along, guys. I know you're having a lot of fun there. It is a great poem, because I read it and I was very moved by it earlier today, and it is extraordinary how just in a few short words you can get so much emotion. I think we need to listen to your next track now, which is Autumn Leaves, and then perhaps after that think about your Tuscan poem, which I think would sort of fits in with that very, very well. With John Trotman, the poet. That was a really surprising choice there from you, John.
You bowled me a bouncer there, James. I like to think I've got fairly Catholic taste, but that wouldn't fall into my
was Nicola Roberts beating my drum. I don't know what happened there. That was meant to be one of your favourites, Autumn Leaves, but it just didn't happen. And Autumn Leaves would have been perfect, because you're going to read us this wonderful poem about the Tuscan landscape.
Thank you. Yeah. By way of contrast, a Tuscan quilt. My sister's a quilter, so I hope she'll like this one. Spread out across the stony hillside, a vivid Tuscan quilt. Dark oak woods raised in texture, a wool appliqué in rough green. Yellow vineyards in an autumn corduroy of rhythmic ridges. Below, studded, needlepoint of grey-green olive groves, and, running on a different grain, a patch of horizontal ancient terrace, crumbling walls etching stripes across a scrub of background calico. These patches, cut in rough rectangles, are stitched with lines of dark and slender flame-shaped cypress trees and studded by buttons of stalwart, thick-walled homes, chapels, farms. A quilt, ancient, well-loved covering, testament to human love and toil through years of loyal tending and concern, touched now, at this evening moment, with the slanting golden flush of early evening light. A gorgeous fabric on which to settle, dream.
That's amazing. Mm. And I think what we love about that is there's so much visually there.
And texturally as well.
Yeah, exactly. You can sort of feel the Tuscan landscape spreading out in front of you. We are going to have that track. We're just going to have a few advertisements, and then we'll get Autumn Leaves on, and then we'll come back to you after that.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, John.
This is Vectis Radio.
White Fire can supply all your fire equipment as well as carry out all required servicing to keep your business, hotel or guest house safe. We offer fire extinguishers, fire alarms, emergency lighting, a full range of fire and safety signs, fire blankets, smoke detectors and much more. We are the largest fire safety specialist on the Isle of Wight. We offer 24-hour island-wide coverage. Contact us on 01983 407 155 or visit us at www.whitefibre.co.uk. White Fire and Security. We pride ourselves in providing a quality service to all of our customers.
White Sight. Here's how it works. You need glasses? Visit an optician, then bring your prescription along to the friendly team in Cross Street Ryde. White Sight is a boutique shop selling budget to designer frames and sunglasses. Stockists of Dior, Gucci, Dolce & Gabbana, Ray-Ban and many more. They are an independent retailer, so you can shop locally for first-class service and great glasses. You'll be spoilt for choice. Either visit them in Cross Street Ryde or check out www.whitesight.co.uk.
Cats Protection in Ryde has been caring for and homing cats on the Isle of Wight since 1961. Every year we help hundreds of island cats find their new forever homes. If you are thinking of adopting a new feline friend, then come along to the Isle of Wight Adoption Centre and we'll be happy to help you. We have cats of all ages, colours and personalities, so we can find a cat for you. Find us in Marlborough Road, Ryde, or check out our website, isleofwight.cats.org.uk, for more information. We're open Wednesday to Sunday, 10 till 4, with late opening on Friday till 7. Our cats can't wait to come home with you.
This is Vectis Radio. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Vectis Radio.
The Afternoon Show, sponsored by Origins Theatre's new production, Charles Dickens Storyteller. We bring Charles Dickens back to life with a lookalike actor in period costume. Go to originstheatre.uk.
The falling leaves drift by my window. The falling leaves of red and gold. I see your I used to hold. Since you went away, the days grow long. but I miss you most of all, my darling. When
was worth the wait, wasn't it? That was Eva Cassidy and Autumn Leaves. And we got there in the end. Nicola Roberts popped up her head round the corner and acted as an interloper a little bit before that. That track was chosen by our guest today, who's poet John Trotman. We've heard a couple of his poems. Sadly, there's not going to be time for those ones in a Japanese tanka style. But I think the best thing to do, if people love your poetry, which we do, is for them to go out and either get your book, either as an iBook or on Amazon. Could you just say a little bit more about your book of poems?
Yes, thanks. It's now published in as a paperback book and available from the marvellous Babushka Books in Shanklin, but also very soon at Waterstones in Newport.
Great.
But it's also on Kindle and on Apple as well. And the e-book version, as well as being pretty cheap, is also able to carry lots of colour photographs. I'm really pleased with that.
Yeah, because you do some photography as well, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, I do, and it includes some of the paintings by my father and by Dave Bowman, whose picture is on the front cover. So I'm really glad that colour does those painters justice.
But you're a real Renaissance man, because as well as doing the photography and the poetry, you're chair of the Samaritans, aren't you?
That's right. I'm chair of Samaritans on the Isle of Wight. Yeah.
I know, and I mean, there's not going to be time, sadly, to talk about that today. But we'd love you to come back to the studio in September, if that's possible, to talk about your work with the Samaritans.
Thank you. I'd love to do that. No, it's a wonderful group of people. I'd love to talk more about what they do.
Yeah, I know it's something that affects a lot of lives here on the island. Brandon, who's going to be on after us today, I know, has said that he's had a lot of friends sort of call him up with troubled times. And to be able to know how to handle friends in difficult circumstances is so important. It must be a very, very responsible job you have there.
It is, and sadly there's a huge need for it, not just in the island but of course across the country, and we're answering phones from people across the whole country.
Yeah. Well, John, look, it's been an absolute privilege having you on the show today. I'm really pleased you were able to come in and share some of your poetry, and I do hope that people at home do take an interest and find out more about your poems. And one final thing, you said Key Arts has a poetry circle that's open to interested people. Could you just mention that one more time in case people are interested?
Thank you, James. It's High Tide Poets at Key Arts every Monday afternoon. But thank you, James and Judith, both for having me in. The time's gone in a flash.
It has.
Yes, for us too.
But bless you for having me. It's been great pleasure.
Well, it's a pleasure for us. Thank you for coming in.
Great, and we look forward to seeing you and talking to you in September. Thanks, John.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.